Think about how we're eating these days. Global palates expecting exotic dishes, but those same plates passionately appointed with as local as possible produce. Neighborhood restaurants which leave as good an aftertaste with the service as the dishes that they deliver. A drinks list that seamlessly segues from the contemporary sip to the classic cocktail, as well as natural, organic, biodynamic wines and craft ciders, but still serving that classic pint of the black stuff and serving it well.
Customers who are led to trying new things and being led by chef's choices or the specials, whilst also, hopefully, are being far more conscious and woke about animal welfare in their menu picks. Smaller plates, sharing, veg-centric, producer-led, value equating to ingredient quality, art and food almost intertwined.
The thing is, this is all newfangled and modern sounding, but Eastern Seaboard in Drogheda has been doing this for 10 years, albeit it's been tightened up, evolved and strengthened over that time. But for a restaurant that began in a residential area of a commuter town in County Louth, right at the beginning of the global financial crash, Eastern Seaboard now looks to its next decade.
Drogheda is where we live, and actually it's where Patrick grew up, and it's no secret that this restaurant, Bar and Grill, is one of our favourite places on earth to eat. Just so happens that it's a 10-minute drive from our house. When it comes to the Eastern Seaboard, it's a kind of, when you know about it, you really know it. And if you've never tried it or never even heard of it, well, all we can say is listen on.
Jenny Glasgow and Reuven Diaz are the pair behind ESB, her at the Coalface, him at the Pass. And what they've achieved in a decade has been exceptional, but not unexpected either. Their talent blazes like a shooting star across the night sky as they've single-handedly changed the dining scene in Drogheda and put the historic town on the map for its food credentials. I'm Patrick.
I'm Russell. And this is Chew the Fat.
Hi, I'm Jenny Glasgow and one part of the partnership of Eastern Seaboard Bar and Grill in Drogheda.
Hi, my name is Reuven Diaz, and I'm the other half. The more difficult half.
Why do you say you're more difficult?
Yes, more difficult.
Don't think you should be asking me that.
An outsider perspective.
Yeah, that's true. We'll leave it at that.
So, happy 10th anniversary. 10 long years. Explain to us how the idea for Eastern Seaboard actually started.
I don't think there really was an idea to begin with. We were gung-ho for an alternate plan at the time. So 2008, we'd bought an old vintage H-van, actually a Citroen H-van, and we had great plans that Reuven and myself, just the two of us, were going to take over a kind of courtyard space on the docks here in Drogheda. The van would be parked in the centre, Reuven would be whipping up some
sandwiches.
Goods in there, and the surrounding buildings that were just around the edge of the courtyard were going to be kind of an open plan, kind of greenhouse meets indoor-outdoor space, so it'd be super casual. I have no idea how that was ever going to work, but we were... That's the path we were on, the trajectory. But meanwhile, Reuven was working in a place called the Waterside in Termonfeckin. One of his customers turned out to be a property developer and approached him to say, hey, would you like to come and have a look? We've got this great building here just on the edge of Drogheda. So Reuven said, yeah, sure, I'll take a look. But like, we literally had no idea that that person was like pitching the building to us. Mm-hmm. So Reuven came, saw the building, and was like, oh, that's great, fantastic, yeah, lovely, nice building. and that was kind of it, not realizing that they were like, well, would you like to take it? And so when that realization kind of dawned on us that this could potentially be a project, we just dived in.
Yeah, I think one of those, it's one of those crazy moments where you just get this sense of... adventure. I don't know what else to call it. It's hard to imagine because we didn't have the resources. We were looking at these guys who introduced the building to us and thinking, how's this going to happen? And we're still not sure. And we how would you even describe that? It wasn't even a partnership, but we we decided that we put all our eggs in one basket, and that's how it happened.
Yeah, well, obviously, they really supported us and helped us in the beginning to be able to begin, because as Reuben said, we had not two pennies to rub together, like literally nothing to our name. But with their support and like, okay, we'll fit the place out for you, you do, guys just do the rest. And that was the starting point to begin.
Yeah.
So, and we did. And here we are, 2018, 10 years later.
Can you remember that first day? Or is it all a complete blur?
No, absolutely. Like, I really can. For me, the whole process, and it was quite short. It was about, like, maybe 9 to 12 weeks, literally, from day one to opening the doors. Like, I don't even know how that was possible, but it happened. Like, so almost just 3 months. So the build-up to it, and as the whole picture started to come together, the structure of the space, the colour story, the positioning of the tables, the input of the bar, as it all came together, I suddenly felt, I could feel a sense of pride for both of us that we did it.
Yeah.
You know, just looking at the space before the doors were even opened, all of the tables and chairs were in place, and looking around and just going, oh my fucking God, we did it.
On that original day, as you opened up the doors, how has it evolved over the years in terms of the offering and the space and the styling?
The space has stayed primarily the same. The styling is something that grows and evolves and shifts seasonally. That's really important to us. So you can always, no matter what time of the year it is, you'll walk into Eastern Seaboard and there'll be a seasonal shift. So blooming flowers in summertime, beautiful leaves in fall, we'll have Christmas decor and all the nuances that come, you know, weekly in between. As regards other evolution, I think that we were very, once we found a groove and we got into that groove, we then just concentrated on trying to make that work as well as it possibly could. So that was an important place for a number of years, was trying to do what we did as well as we could and continually get better. Would you agree?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think one of the things that you have to remember is we're talking 2008, and there was this incredible shift in the country where suddenly people were functioning, scrambling for their livelihoods, and here we are opening this huge restaurant at the same time. And I think that our first premise of being a neighborhood restaurant, a place for the town to just gather and share things, became almost like this unstoppable force. And
we often describe, well, I describe Eastern Seaboard as like some unimagined wild beast. And Reuben and I are just two little riders on the back, desperately trying to hold on to the reins. You know, I have that visual image in my head. And really, that was how it felt at the very beginning. That's how it felt in the middle. And good God, it still feels like that, you know. And I think that's really more a testament to the fact that we're really just not very good at business. If we knew what we were doing, we might be able to ride that beast a little easier, you know?
Well, like, you both grew up here. Did you guys grow up in town or out of the...
Well, I grew up here. Yeah. He is a blow-in of...
Oh, blow-in, okay.
Yeah, recent years. From... Balbriggan.
Oh, God,
I know.
Down
I know. Yeah. I know I have to leave now, so you can just take the microphone there. But I think you've kind of... I guess adopted it as your sort of hometown too. But I grew up here, so I've spent 30 years here. And the next question I was going to ask is, are you aware that you changed the landscape of the town?
I think probably for me, and I'm sorry that I'm the one answering all the questions, I jump right in, but I am at the coal face. So I'm the person, you know, meeting people as they come through the door. And from day one, and for 10 years, people will say again and again, you know, thank you so much for being here. you've changed our lives, our quality of life has improved, we feel like we are somewhere else. So you walk in through the doors of Eastern Seaboard in the most bizarre location, really, when you think about it. You walk in through the doors and you are literally, as people say, transported somewhere else. It's got a big city vibe in a small town.
Speaking of the location, how do you make this work? Because I think anyone who comes here, or anyone that we tell about Eastern Seaboard who hasn't tried here yet, and shame on them, trying to describe it is like, it's kind of in a residential area, kind of close to the train station on the outskirts of the town. It's just houses and schools around. How do you make that work?
I mean, like, really, what the, I mean, like, not to sugarcoat it, but this is really a strip mall. And I think that there is something, I guess before I answer that question, I want to get back to, you know, when you look at Drogheda pre-Eastern Seaboard, I think that the nature of the restaurants were so different. And I think that either they were trying to give you a restaurant that was a celebration, so then it's for your anniversaries or birthdays, so then it would be more expensive and the service was a little overbearing. And then you had the other spectrum, which was, you know, pretty scary. And that was it for, you know, and I could be wrong, you know, and I think that, you know, I think every town deserves a place which is comfortable, you know, comfortable to be in, and the food and the environment is just, not just the background, but it is, becomes part and parcel to your life. And I think those spaces are important in every place.
I think for me as well, that piece that you touched on about neighborhood place, bizarrely, when we were putting together, you know, the ideas for Eastern Seaboard as we were going along and we had to make our pitch to the bank and so on, but that was really the key essence, was neighborhood place. And bizarrely, over the years, of all the things that may have shifted and moved a little bit, that essence remained true. So I've always said this, it's like, you know, sitting along the bar, you'll have a couple of guys in suits, you'll have the guy or the girl in her painter's clothes, a farmer with his boots on the next table, you've got a young couple having a date, table over in the corner, it's like a family with grandparents and their children. You know, I love that. Yeah. And that's the flavor of a town right there.
Yeah. And as you say that, I have been here on probably about 6-7 nights when exactly looking around,
yeah,
it is that scene.
Yeah.
It's not painting a picture of anything that's,
yeah,
not true.
Yeah.
It is entirely true, because it is a magnet for so many people in the, mm-hmm, town, and it's an occasion place, but it's also, I'm hungry tonight and I really,
yeah,
don't want to cook, which,
yeah,
happens most times, and it's that.
That's really important too, because there you have also the best of both worlds. So yes, it is for celebrations, it is for your anniversaries, your birthdays, your new job, you quit your job, whatever it is, it's that, but it's also, you know, Tuesday night, I don't want to cook.
Yeah.
I just want to have something to eat. And I think what you can do in Eastern Seaboard is that you can splash out, you can break the bank, or you can just come in and have a beer and a sandwich. You know, it's like across the board.
And over the years, on the menu, is there any kind of heralds or classics that you're proud of?
Well, I mean, like, I think that there is a lot of dishes that have come through the menu that we thought that, oh yes, we'd definitely keep that menu forever on the menu, and then reboot it. And I don't know how that happens, but I think that there is also that motivation to evolve. And originally the evolution happened in the dish. So we started off with a lamb shank dish, which is simple enough, but the recipe itself evolved 4 or 5 times. I think it's less about specific dishes, but it's trying to maintain the space that you enjoy food in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're trying to kind of focus on.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Well, I think also, I mean, it's worth touching upon the fact that, you know, local provenance has always been really important to us from day one. And that's been something that's really grown and got stronger and developed over the years, with at our core being a really strong yet select representation of what we feel is the best of the Boyne Valley. And that's regardless of how, and we haven't really touched on it yet, but regardless of how our menu is going to evolve and change, that will still always remain as an important part of what we do.
But I just go back, I think there's two facets to the, like when we opened, the you notice our menu is quite large. Mm-hmm. And I think that it touches upon what Jenny was talking about, that there were elements that appealed to a broad spectrum of people. And that's a difficult thing to maintain. And when we talk about our love of how amazing the landscape for food, for produce has become in the area. It's not just about being a showcase, but it's also finding ways to fall in love with something. Like a good example are the garlic scapes from Drummond House. It's a beautiful product, but till we paired it with a cured
soy cured egg yolk,
it just, you're waiting, sometimes there isn't the right time to use something. Mm-hmm. And it's finding that dish that makes something worthwhile for us in terms of provenance. Mm.
Mm. And good to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
How many items are on the menu and how many covers would you have?
I haven't counted. I haven't counted how many menu items there are. Like, there has been a little seismic shift. We have reduced our menu somewhat. It's still a very large menu, but it has been reduced just to, you know, become a little bit more streamlined. How many covers do we have? About 100?
Mm.
Yeah, we've got a beautiful big bar area and a lovely dining space as well, which are kind of interconnected. The bar area is marvelous. You can arrive, you know, before dinner, have drinks beforehand, or settle in at the bar after and have, you know, after dinner cocktails. It's ideal for that. And you were talking about our location, so being a little bit out of town means that you don't have to pick up sticks and head off after dinner. You know, you can be here before and after. It's great. We like to just close the doors, keep you all in.
Yeah. But like originally when we first opened, we imagined having a bakery presence in the space. And I think that goes to the second part of the story where the Branham Bakery opened. It was obvious shortly after the beginning that having a bakery counter here in the space is just not going to work.
And then we opened the actual bakery, and then that nearly didn't work.
Oh.
Yeah, that was tough. I mean, like, it's almost like there's a lot of great ideas in it. I love the space. I love the way people enjoy the space. But it wasn't supposed to be a cafe that it's turned into. It was supposed to be completely retail. You just go in, buy your baked goods, and leave. And there might be a stool here or there.
There was just small little window seats, like beautiful layered cushions in the windows. But that was it. But yeah, no, it's full-on cafe business now.
It's ridiculous.
Brownhound is about a couple of meters down the road in the other strip mall, so to speak, kind of area of the estate. And the cakes, if you follow us too on Instagram particularly, you'll see them cropping up frequently. And they are absolutely beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's a really great asset to have. And I think a lot of people, it's that idea of that you dip in here for the occasions and the thing, and then you go there for your treats. And it's almost, I suppose, two different clientels in a way, that it's like birthdays, treats, bring it home. And it's bringing the Eastern Seaboard experience home with them, which is really, really nice.
How do you stay inspired, or how do you find inspiration?
Good Lord, I would love my answer to be, well, we travel so much, you know? I would just love to be able to say that, but we are locked in here. I think it's been about 3 years since we've been away. And thank God for Instagram is all I can say. But yeah, like, you know, I give out to Ruben for being on social media, and then he gives out to me, and I say, well, for God's sake, we haven't even been away. So like, I mean, you got to see what's going on in the rest of the world, you know? It's like we built this beautiful prison and we spend every day.
But, you know, dialing back from that angst a little bit.
Really angst? Did you pick up on that somewhere?
I think, yeah, we've been lucky that we've experienced so much, and I think that's one of the things that when I first met Jenny, she was vegetarian, and it was quite interesting that it wasn't shortly after that she started eating every single type of meat and
what's that about? I'm very proud that I was vegetarian, but like I went from bacon to foie gras in like 2.5 seconds.
And that's why we love you. Never change, never let society change you.
That's like you.
I was too, yeah.
I was for 4 years. Mm. And I changed overnight as well. Yeah. And then the world opened up to me. Yeah.
And it was all my fault. Yeah.
Interestingly though, I absolutely feel, and I can feel that kind of seismic shift and surge about vegetarianism and animal welfare and what we're eating, and it's hugely important, you know, to me as a person, but also for both of us in terms of business. I mean, Reuven might disagree a little bit, you know, at some level, but I definitely feel, even from a customer perspective, you know, having... And we've always had a really good representation for vegetarian dishes. Mm. And now that encompasses making sure that some of those vegetarian offerings are also vegan. Mm. And that's important. And that will remain a really important part. And I think it'll be something that'll grow, become even a little bit stronger on our menu for next year also.
Speaking of the new menu and the changes, and at this point you're here 10 years.
Yeah.
How are you changing it for the next... few years?
Well, I don't know. I think we can both answer this, but for me, I feel that we have learned a lot over the last 10 years. We have learned a lot. And in learning some of those lessons and growing as people, growing as a chef, Reuven, growing as myself as a person over 10 years, I think that our next development as people and as a business will represent something more of who we are now and who we have become. And I think some pieces, I feel like it's almost like there's a jigsaw on the table, you know, and slowly but surely pieces, elements are coming together and the picture is becoming a little clearer. And along the way, a couple of those pieces of the jigsaw were the search to find an identity and to find a direction. Personally for me, I always found a most difficult question if somebody over the years would ask, so what kind of food do you do at Eastern Seaboard? You know?
Wow.
You know? I know, and that was really hard, and I hated that I stumbled over that. And somewhere along the line, I remember reading or somebody said, if you cannot, you know, describe and define your business in a sentence or in a couple of words, you don't really know what you're doing. And I thought, oh my God, that's me. So now I feel like both of us, okay, I'm only talking for myself here. I can see Reuven like raising his eyebrows. I feel with this development that I feel so much more clear about our direction and our path. And I feel that this represents who we are, where we are, and the kind of fun we want to have in 2019.
I think also there's, it's trying to look at the big picture. I think that right now a lot of our focus is here, and I think that we would like some form of hospitality to happen at home, and also see what the changes in the bakery could be like. I think that the bakery could find other places to show up, which might be really great. I think that we need to simplify things here in the restaurant, keep it still a place for the town in terms of a cultural place, a place for, you know, to gauge in socially.
So can I jump in there?
Yes,
it's just something that I remembered. And that's, it's about, so many times people will say to me, you know, they've been traveling. So they've been in Europe somewhere. They've been in Tenerife, or they've been further afield. And they'll maybe just get chatting to another Irish person. And inevitably the question will be, so where are you from? And they'll say Drogheda. And that other person will go, oh, that's the, you know, Eastern Seaboard's there. So yeah. You've got that restaurant. What's it called?
Yeah.
That really 100% without actually knowing it, we've put Drogheda on the map somewhat. So we'd like to stay that little pinpoint on the map and continue with our offering. But the climate has changed a lot, and you know, the structure of our business has changed a lot. And you know, in 2008, a lot of people were looking for work. In 2018, it's harder to find people to work. The environment is hugely competitive. Chefs are difficult to find. And also our desire to kind of tailor our life to what it means for this restaurant is also important to us. 10 years of working continually, in the beginning 7 days a week, then 6 days. We close Wednesdays now. For the new year, we are really going to consider closing a second day. We don't know whether that'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but one of those days. We'll keep Wednesday as the midpoint, but we're definitely going to close a second day. And I look forward to that, to have a semblance of a life that really is a little bit more, God, I hate to use this word, normalized. Sorry. But maybe I can get out into my garden. Maybe then I can build those raised beds that I really want to. And maybe then we can grow some of the products that we need for the restaurant there, because we'll have more time to get our hands dirty and do some of the things that we really have a yearning to do. Yeah, we've grown up, or we're getting old, or one of those things, I don't know. But yeah, I feel there's more to the story of Eastern Seaboard than what it has been.
Are you enjoying it as much now?
I definitely enjoy it in a different way. You know, early years were just kind of panic. Middle years were coming to grips with some struggle. And these later years, I mean, we don't need to kind of rehash over all the old coals, but you're aware that we had that difficulty where our manager stole a huge amount of money from us. Then we, when the legislation changed to allow dogs in, we did that, and we got a huge amount of backlash from that.
Wait, can I just like elaborate on that a little bit? Because it is an interesting, I mean, I can't just say it's an interesting story, but I think it's important to note that we're great in a lot of things. I think there's a lot of things, a lot of areas that Jenny and I contribute to that are hallmarks of the business, but as business people, we're really, really crap at it. Like, you couldn't get the two worst business types.
Yeah, we're definitely creatives, 100%. And along that, we're just trying to wing our way into like a business world at the same time. What we really need is a grown-up. We need somebody with us to help us guide this ship. You know, we need somebody that's going to be dotting their I's and crossing their T's and checking the balance and what's the margin and what did you pay for that and how much does it cost and how many is left. We need that. And we haven't got that. We've never had that.
I think a lot of the ideas when the bakery happened, certain things, that it's hard to say, but I think that a lot of the, our bad decisions come from trying to make decisions as a business person. And I think that's when a lot of the bad decisions come to play.
When we think we know what we're doing, but actually it turns out that we don't.
Because, that's true. I mean, like, when you look back maybe 2-3 years ago, the way we were operating is almost... We're functioning almost like a dinosaur. We have a menu that takes an incredible amount of hands to make. It might be casual, but when you walk into that kitchen, it's like a hive of people. And it's unusual for this style of food in this area to be produced like that. And it doesn't make business sense. Mm-hmm. But in a way, in what we do, it makes a lot of sense. What we're looking for always is somebody who could join our team that wants to kind of help push our direction in a more business
oriented
sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key part, you know, to what could be the next 10 years for us.
Yeah, I'm hopeful actually, and there's a little small seed in the back of my mind that with the 2019 changes that we're feeling are going to come around, that there may well be a sense that this is quite a neat package, that it's tidy, it's cost effective, it works well, and maybe it could be replicated in other places, in other towns. If I had a penny for every time that someone stood at that till with me and said, would you not open one of these in, insert every single small town name. But yeah, maybe this new incarnation is going to be that, because it couldn't have been Eastern Seaboard because, as Reuben said, menu too large, volume of staffing absolutely huge, but our new direction could be tidy, could be neat. Maybe we can. I don't know.
But there is a chance we won't be able to figure that out.
That's a very big chance.
Stick on the creative vibes. Creative vibes the whole way.
Like when you look at one facet, I mean, there are so many amazing things. Whether it's the odd dinners that we are involved in, or the things that is generated between the bakery and here in terms of the directions of whether it's food or a visual language or a palette for something is quite extraordinary. And I think that if we can spend more of our time focusing on that, I think that a lot of the struggles we're going through will make more sense. But we just haven't found that key.
I think so. I feel like you're so right there. There is part of something about something more extraordinary, don't you think? We're all very settled into humdrum burgers and hum steaks and la 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 chicken blah and so on. Like, yes, I want
chicken blah though.
I want extraordinary. Yeah, I want exciting. I want something new. Like, set my palate on fire and like make it so like, wow, I can't believe I just ate that. That was phenomenal. I'm going to travel 25 miles to go and eat that again. That's what I want, you know, and I do think the landscape has changed. Every single place, everywhere you go right now, it's bloody burger, bloody steak, bloody everything, the same. Yeah. Same, yawn.
Like we had a really interesting mechanical thing that happened when we had our first menu. It was interesting to see. We trialed this thing where you had a main component, a main dish, and you had a choice of two sides. Now, it just seems flippant like that, but it's funny how you take that main component and you give the customer a choice where to take it. And that was something that allowed a form of ownership, so that you felt like, okay, I'm going to have this lovely half-roast chicken today, but I'd like it to be a salad. And that suddenly became your choice. And in 2008, when things are falling apart, having that choice of making that dish your own was quite phenomenal. Soon enough, you'd see a lot of places start doing the same thing. And I don't think they quite understood the mechanics of it, where it was that idea that you could take this simple main component and suddenly move it into any direction you wanted to. So if the weather was cold, you wanted, you know, mash with it.
Or, oh God, don't mention the mash. Jesus. Yeah. This mash is definitely a four-letter word. Yeah.
But yeah,
it's controversial.
Yeah. Bloody well is.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to when we had this issue with our lovely manager. We were kind of unwittingly forced to make changes that we realized was a bad move, but we felt we were forced to make them because things had become so dramatically hard and we didn't realize why.
Except it was him.
Yeah. And suddenly we had to really make each dish financially sensible. And I don't think we were ready for it, and definitely Drogheda was like, you know, what the, you know, what are you doing?
We were panicking. Yeah. We were totally panicking. We were looking at a situation where we were going downhill and we didn't know why and what was happening. We were like, fuck it. We need to do something, and we need to do something fast. Quick, 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 change the menu. Quick, get a margin. Quick, who? Do you know what a margin is? Quick, fix that. So yeah, it was like super panic.
On that brilliant note, have you got dreams that you are yet to achieve in life?
Oh my God, I can't believe you asked me that question. That's like a whole other, like a whole other interview. I've got like hours and hours of, you know.
I've got hours.
But yeah.
But I think it's good to start from the piece, like we're fortunate enough that we live in where Jenny grew up, which is an old, basically the old stables of
Big House.
It's a few, couple hundred years old. And we always imagined we could start talking about hospitality there, whether it was having small dinners. There was enough space to grow things. There was enough space to maybe have a few rooms. And I think it's an important part of what the next 10 years could be, because the things that we would do in that space could inform both the bakery and the restaurant. And it would be a place where, you know, we could have gatherings or, and we could talk about certain issues, whether it's about local things, or even, you know, thematically could be, you know, whether the solstice dinners we do, or, you know, could be a lot of things.
I think 120% hospitality is in our bones. Yeah. Like, I don't know how, but it is.
Yeah.
And hospitality wrapped up in a cloak of creativity and, progress and inspiration and a desire to keep, you know, moving and evolving. I, for one, you talked about hopes and dreams, I'd love a hotel. Like, I really would. And I think that that's definitely something that Drogheda is missing.
Yes.
In terms of some beautiful little boutique space. It is the anchor of the Boyne Valley. Goodness me, you need somewhere lovely to stay, you know? So, you know, talking about dreams, yeah, I mean, I'd love, you know, a fairy godmother or godfather investor to just knock on my door and say, would you like to do a hotel?
Out there.
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Can we talk
about the solstice?
Yes.
I was just about to talk about that.
We've gone for the last 2-3 years.
Yeah.
And
just explain what it
okay.
is.
Okay. So it is a dinner on June the 21st mm-hmm. every year, which takes place in the Boyne Brewhouse.
Yeah.
Which is the unlikeliest place in the world. But
it's an old car showroom.
It's an old car showroom, glass surround, long tables, amazing florals, amazing food. And it is the hottest table in the town every single year. Everybody we talk to, the minute the clock turns 12 on New Year's Eve, they say, when are the tickets coming out for the solstice? How did that come about? And it is so iconic that I'm not even sure you understand how iconic and brilliant it really, really is.
I have to say, I love it. It is a great event, and I enjoy working with Sally Ann so much in the brewhouse. She's just like a little firecracker powerhouse getting things done. And she and I work really well as a team, actually, on this event.
That's true.
It would not be possible, you know. It's as much the Boyne Brewhouse as it is Eastern Seaboard. I always say that it's just a magnificent collaboration between the two. And it is something that we look forward to every year. Funnily, we haven't got better at it every year. It's always still a mad scramble to get things done, but maybe that's the essence of all good events. But yeah, this year just gone by, I could not believe the tickets sold out in like, what, 20 minutes
yeah.
or something?
Mm-hmm.
It was unreal. So yeah, you're right. I don't think we really have an idea of what it means to the 120 people that come and sit and have dinner there that night. It is good, you know.
So much fun. Like even just thinking of it now, we're just giddy with excitement.
Yeah.
And it's just the food is the highlight, and it's the entertainment, and it's the atmosphere, you know. And atmosphere and spaces is something that you've created here and there, and you've been able to pretty much transport that to that space. Interiors is something that you have gotten perfect with, and I think the amount of times that we've looked at our own place and gone, well, how can we seaboard this up?
I wish.
Yeah. How do you come up with this lovely space?
I don't know. Do you know that Reuben studied architecture back in LA? So there's a lovely design sensibility from Reuben. And obviously, if anybody who knows my mother, Mo, will know that she's the queen of interior styling and tablescapes and so on. So I assume that, you know, that artistic, creative background comes for me from her. And then as a team, Reuben and I work really well together when it comes to the interiors. And I think it's always been that kind of collaboration to create spaces that... And actually, that's one thing I do feel about Eastern Seaboard, is that, bizarrely, the space is kind of timeless. Mm-hmm. Like, when you think about restaurants, you can think about how they may date or feel old or, like, oh, you know, feel tired. To me, and I don't know whether I'm wrong or not, but there's so much about Eastern Seaboard that's as good today, if not better, than it was 10 years ago without a huge amount of change. It's like just small elements, whether it be lighting or, you know, mirrors or found antique objects or whatever it is, has kind of just come together beautifully to make a space that's super comfortable, easy to be in, has a sense of kind of style about it, but that there's nothing that makes you feel uncomfortable, there's nothing that dates it, you know, there's nothing that sets it back. Yeah, it's a good space.
Yeah, but at the same time, more importantly, I think Jenny's visual language has changed, evolved. I think, like, every time I see something, and I use Jenny's Instagram posts as an example, I'm always taken aback, you know, and I think that in a way it talks about what is current with what we're doing, but also it has aspiration in it. It has seeds of direction, and there's a fluidity in the way the visual images feel to me that really represents what we do, and it's not food centric. There's many different cues in there that.
I mean, we could totally easily set up, you know, a flower shop. That would be beautiful. I can only imagine what that would be like. I've often thought about having that at the side of the bakery. yeah, a little flower shop would be lovely. I have dreams of a cider bar somewhere. I mean, I would just love that, yeah.
Can you imagine, like, I mean, there's so many great cider producers that, you know, like Drada really would be amazing to have a cider bar.
Right.
Just, you know, what is local in terms of cider, and, you know, people can, you know, just like
in... Big, beautiful marble slab chilled with a big hunk of Boyne Valley Blue right there, just to go along with those...
The dates.
Yeah.
Stuffed dates.
Yeah.
I know there's one burning question that you have.
And I bet I do not even have to ask.
And I think I've asked you this before in passing, and you just go, ha, 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 and walk away from me. And I have a seatbelt on that chair, you can't move. Back at the beginning of Gastrogaze, really, and which... incidentally, was, I guess, the start of our relationship. I can't remember when the two joined together. You had a place right beside Isis, or right beside Brown Hound.
Moe's.
Yeah. I miss it.
Yeah.
It was, I loved that spot. Yeah. We both did, and it was just so different.
Definitely, we talked about this recently.
Definitely. A weekend of specials.
It was?
Yes. Yeah. And we weren't here.
Yeah. Corn dogs, fried chicken, hush puppies, the ribs were there. We had oysters on the counter at the weekends. We had snipes of champagne in the fridge.
But I think that's another example of something where if there was a way to produce it, manage it, I think that could have been an interesting piece to develop, Mo's.
Great idea. Beautiful products. We just didn't run it very well.
Well, it wasn't practical. No. You know, again, we weren't very practical. The menu was large.
The items were expensive. We were selling them too cheap. Yada, yada, yada. Story of our lives.
A learning curve, though.
Yes, an expensive
time,
one.
Yeah, but at the same time, I would love to see, you know, 50 of those.
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, how amazing it is to have fried chicken and champagne in one.
I know, that's like,
you know,
dreamy,
breath.
Isn't it?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think it was really before its time in that way. And I think so many people who we talk to from the area just speak with such fondness of it.
Yeah,
and it is. It makes me smile thinking about it, because it's one of those early food memories for the two of us. It was when we lived up in Dublin, and I think if he's like closed at 10 and I was finishing work at 9, we might have gone past on the motorway to get up here just in time, you know, the type of way. It was very, very special, but I just love the Hush Puppies. They were, do another weekend special, please.
No, actually, and the other evening when we just had a very impromptu last minute gathering to celebrate 10 years, which unfortunately you guys couldn't make it, but we serve corn dogs. We serve corn dogs.
Oh, my heart's broken.
Cancel this thing right now. So could you talk us through a few elements of the changes in 2019? Anything new on the menu?
There will be some new items, but I think that at its core, we're not going to frighten people too much. We have, as we said, we have learned some lessons. So yeah, at its core, there will be still elements of the old menu. It will be nice and tight and more compact. But something we really want to develop is part of a sensibility and a background and some of those historical references for Reuven and his cultural, you know, upbringing. So I think you could probably definitely expect to see more of an Asian bent on the menu that's going to come through, and I'm really, really excited about that.
The funny thing is, when we first opened this place, we avoided specifically that the dishes weren't Asian in nature, that there wasn't an Asian influence in the dishes.
Yeah.
And partly it was so that when people came in, they were like, oh, obviously because there's an Asian dude in the kitchen, that we have Asian dishes. And that was something that...
And actually, not to interrupt, sorry, I know I am interrupting, but I think it was the first menu item that moved onto our list was something from Moe's, and it was Moe's cold spicy noodle salad. Because we serve that as a side up there, along with carrot slaw and da-da-da-da, and then when you put it all together, it's phenomenal. And that was one of the first things that moved over here as a dish. And so we're going to take that as a springboard and move forward.
I think that one of the things, the important part of this change is to, not finalize, but to kind of consolidate our identity of what we do, in where we are, who we are, where we are, and for that piece to evolve, I think that the sense that we were this grand bistro, neighborhood bistro kind of thing, needs to kind of slowly fall away, because so many other places are starting to do that, and I think that's great, and I think for our next 10 years, I think we need to kind of
push
our identity more, and that means dropping a lot of things that identified us as that bistro.
There are some nice surprises on the new menu, though, I have to say, and I think there will be a lot of happy people about one thing. Lash.
Ultimate comfort. This is a place that, as we said, a lot of people will visit for an occasion, a special night out, an anniversary, birthdays, and the likes. Where do you go for said occasions?
Well, I mean, like...
We looked at... That was what happened right there, was we both looked at each other rather sadly. It's like, aww.
I mean, we are fortunate that there has been... we've had amazing food moments. But part of the reason why Jenny cooks really well, and her mom cooks really well, and so our meals at home are really quite a pleasure.
I didn't know you enjoyed it, Michael.
Yes.
It all comes out on the podcast.
Yes, well, I do. But like we had a fabulous meal at Kai's. Like Eto's always been a favorite, mm-hmm. and there's so many other moments that we've.
Okay, can we just talk about also like the pilgrimages we would make to Cork to eat at Takashi Miyazaki's little takeaway? Mm-hmm. Unreal.
Yeah. And partly, I mean, like people are like, why are you so obsessed with this place in Cork? And part of it is that it reminds me of my mom's cooking. And I think that's a connection. I could eat that style of food every day. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we haven't tried his new place. Mm-hmm. But like we'd go there for, we'd book a place for the night with the kids, mm-hmm. go there for lunch, and then go back for dinner.
Yeah, happily.
Yeah.
Little glass of natural wine in Latitude 51. Yeah. I mean, that to me, that's just like a perfect trip.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that like food right now in this country is amazing. There are so many adventurous, brave people cooking.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we did our last solstice supper with Keith, mm-hmm. and it's nice to, it's amazing to see a generation of people in food that are just going to change, just blow the
yeah.
place apart.
When that guy gets going, everybody needs to watch out.
But I think there's a lot of people mm-hmm. in that group, you know, that age group mm-hmm. that are really going to, you know, like the next 10 years in this country will be unrecognizable.
And I really think actually Galway is pushing that. Mm-hmm. Galway is absolutely unreal. I keep saying to Ruben, please, let's move. But no, our roots are here. And I don't know if you saw my post the other day about Mark Jenkinson's little rosé, Pet Nat rosé. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. And like, I don't know whether it has that supernatural vibe to it, but I really felt like I was tasting the Boyne Valley. Those were grapes grown in Tankardstown, made by Mark Jenkinson. That just blew my mind. I felt like, wow, this place really tastes good.